From Michigan Radio, I'm Lester Graham. America still struggles with race, but those struggles are changing. As the white majority has been shrinking, tensions have been rising. You can see it in anti-immigration movements, in the feeling among some white people they're being oppressed. Meanwhile, a new generation of black protest organizations has been taking to the streets as black Americans feel a greater threat from white-dominated politics and police. Michigan Radio and the Detroit Journalism Cooperative are looking at how race relations have changed since the civil rights movement of the 1960s. When many cities in the U.S. erupted in protests, riots, and uprisings in the 1960s, most white people were bewildered. President Lyndon Johnson appointed the National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders, known as the Kerner Commission. He wanted to know why the rebellions took place. White people were surprised by the findings. The Kerner Report indicated white attitudes toward black people led to the uprisings. White racism had built the society that suppressed the chance of equality for black people. Some scholars argue that Americans, white Americans, have not learned the lesson of those 1960s uprisings or the recommendations to correct the problems.
In the wake of the Kerner Report, we have created two societies that are deeply unequal. That is a fact.
Heather Ann Thompson is a professor at the University of Michigan and wrote the book, Who's Detroit?
The inequality, income inequality, racial inequality, suburban city inequality, job inequality, we could just go on and on and on, is far worse. And that is a deeply racialized inequality. So we've done that. The question remains, what do we do next?
Resentment surrounding issues of race has been building over those decades. Resentment among blacks who still find themselves at the bottom of the economic ladder, and resentment among whites who've been knocked down a rung or two of that economic ladder. Paul Lee is a Detroit historian who's written on the 1967 uprising in Detroit. He says things are not any better today than they were in the 1960s, and perhaps worse. He says the protests we've seen in the last couple of years are revealing.
Our situation, that is the situation of African Americans in Detroit and throughout the country, I think is much more precarious than it's been perhaps in a century.
He bases that on the loss of the economic underpinnings of black neighborhoods. Few blacks own their own homes, a significant factor in building wealth. The relatively few middle-class black families who could afford it later followed white families to the suburbs. With them went some black businesses. The little economic power African Americans had in the city slipped away. But there was optimism because political power grew. In Detroit, when the black vote grew in strength, Detroit elected its first black mayor, Coleman Young. Young worked to make sure black residents were better represented in city departments. Paul Lee says that does not mean the majority black population actually ran the city.
While I think that black political power is important, I think that if there's no economic foundation, then black power is relatively meaningless. Black political power is relatively meaningless.
With recent investments by billionaires, white billionaires, in Detroit's Central Business District, there is a celebrated downtown revitalization. But that keeps investment in white hands. Many longtime residents in the neighborhoods don't feel they're included. They don't feel they're sharing in the city's new prosperity. While much of the American economy has been recovering, Detroit residents have been seeing a huge increase in tax foreclosures. Unemployment rates remain about twice that of the state and national numbers. Poverty is widespread. Under the same kind of circumstances, the 1960s and 1970s saw a rise in protest organizations, some of them militant. Former Detroit City Council member Sheila Cockrell was an activist alongside her husband Kenneth Cockrell. He was in the League of Revolutionary Black Workers. She says the term black power suddenly entered the national lexicon back then.
For many people, it was an expression of the necessity of being at the table, if you will, that when decisions are made, that the voices of black people are part of the decision making.
The shift from black power to today's Black Lives Matter seems to be slipping from a demand to have a seat at the table to the request, please don't shoot us. But Black Lives Matter isn't the only protest movement. In Detroit, dating back to at least the takeover by an emergency manager and then bankruptcy, new groups have been raising their voices in and around the city. Groups such as New Era Detroit, the Change Agent Consortium, the Detroit Water Brigade. There are protests for economic inclusion, against foreclosures and against water shutoffs, and against police brutality.
No racist police! No racist police!
I'm hoping that in that constellation of organizations and people that there's going to emerge, you know, the next generation of authentic grassroots leadership that has a set of ideas that motivate people to act.
Some of those ideas are based on the belief that government, especially state government, ignores the needs of people of color.
We're skeptical of government because government isn't serving us.
Reverend Charles Williams II is the president of the Michigan chapter of National Action Network. He says people are frustrated that in many ways life in Detroit is worse now than it was in 1967.
As we see our struggle today, we see that some of those same issues are ahead of us. And so this is the reason why we must continue to organize, and it's the reason why we continue to organize.
And Williams believes black voices are getting louder because white voices are getting louder. He says since Barack Obama took office, certain white groups have escalated the rhetoric of bigotry and given it a national stage. He thinks that has a lot to do with a black man in the White House.
I think it had more to do not with his character, not with his willingness to go and meet and do and work, but the main fact is he's African American.
And a black president is seen by some as the ultimate threat to white power structure and privilege. So there's no rush by most of the politicians who count on white votes to do much. Heather Ann Thompson, the U of M professor, says policymakers today largely are ignoring the issues in the same way policymakers ignored them in the 1960s.
The good news is that we now, I think, are really hearing from those people who have suffered this very directly. And that's why Ferguson has blown up. And that's why Baltimore has exploded. And that's why people across cities in America or cities across America are speaking out and saying, no, we need a different civil rights movement, right? We need a different moment of change.
And to be effective, that change will have to negotiate opportunities for African Americans to be included in both political and economic power. I'm Lester Graham, Michigan Radio News.
Support for the Detroit Journalism Cooperative on Michigan Radio comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, Renaissance Journalism's Michigan Reporting Initiative, and the Ford Foundation. Assistance in reporting this piece came from Bill McGraw with Bridge Magazine, a DJC partner, and Michigan Radio's Sarah Swick.